Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, hello campers and welcome to the second edition of the A to Z of Festivals podcast with me, Rob DeBank. How are you doing? Thank you so much for all the support, love, comments and positive vibes generally about Emily Evis last week. And yeah, and the Glastonbury lineup is out and what a cracker it is as usual. So yes, fully getting into festival season mode over here. So this week I managed to tempt the one and only John Empsom into my miniature office and stick him in front of my microphone and get him to talk about things that he does, namely festivals, of course, because that is what we are doing here, podcast about festivals and how they work. So yeah, last week you heard Emily talking about how she kind of puts Glastonbury together, some of her little secrets and stuff. This week it's John Empsom. If you don't know his name, he is one of the directors and programmer of the Wilderness Festival, as well as Eden Sessions and Citadel. So spreading himself quite thin between Cornwall, Oxfordshire and London, and yeah, kind of doing a cracking job on all those three festivals. So I've known him for about 10 or 12 years. He started though 30 years ago at Stiff Records, working in a warehouse. Then he helped run the Beggar's Banquet label, and working with like bands like The Prodigy, The Cult, The Charlatans and The Ramones. Also doing A&R with his own label Mantra. In 2001 set up the Eden Sessions at Cornwall's Eden Project. Set up Somerset Festival, I don't know if you remember that one. That was a cracker with Jack Johnson and Ben Howard. And then that all led him to becoming the musical director and programmer of Wilderness Festival. So that's mostly what we're talking about today, and a bit about Citadel and Eden Sessions too. So here we go, without further ado, Mr. John Empsom. So, welcome back, ladies and gents, boys and girls. It's the A to Z of Festivals with Rob DeBank. And this week it's a, well, it's a J, it's an E, it's a W, and, well, pretty much every letter under the sun. It's John Empsom from Wilderness and the Eden Sessions and Citadel.
Hello, Rob.
How you doing?
Very good.
That's pretty greedy, having three festivals under your belt. That's
yeah, isn't it just? They just sort of, you know, they come along and then you can't refuse them.
Any more plans to add to that?
Possibly. To that? I mean, I am in quite a strange sort of position as a promoter because I'm kind of like half my own man and half owned, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So some of my festivals are owned by bigger companies and some aren't. So I'm always kind of out there looking at opportunities. You
cool.
know, I never okay. want to be too relaxed.
No, keep you on your
keep
toes.
Keep the stress levels up.
Okay, well, we're going to do a few little true or falses just about your festivals, and then we'll get back into the history of them and who's on the bills for 2019. So, yeah, true or false, John? The Eden Project's kind of domes are held down by giant tent pegs, which you go round whacking into the ground when it's windy in your pants.
I wish it was true, but it's false, sadly.
Okay.
Wilderness is well known for its beautiful lake and skinny dipping. Once so many people got in the lake, the water all emptied out and they all lay there at the bottom shivering, naked.
I'm going to go with false on that, but again, I wish it was true.
Is it still a thing?
It's a big thing. Yeah, I've not actually done it personally, but I've seen a lot of it. Not that I'm, you know, watching.
Daytime? Nighttime?
Daytime, yeah. Okay. No swimming at nighttime, Rob, you know. That's dangerous.
Okay. True or false? The Eden Project is the largest captive rainforest in the world.
That is true.
And is it one of the wonders of the world as well?
We'd like to call it that, but officially, I don't think so. Unofficially, yes.
Unofficially, absolutely. The eighth wonder of the world. Cool. Number four, Citadel's headline, a Rag and Bone Man's rider demands are so massive you've had to reinforce the dressing room floors.
I don't think we've actually seen his rider yet, so, you know, the jury's out on that one. No. Could be true.
It's probably just some vegan sticks and spinach.
Yes.
Maybe.
Exactly.
And last but not least, David Beckham lives opposite the wilderness site and watches the main stage from his bathroom window through binoculars.
I have heard a rumour that he bought a house very close by. He's built a new house, I think, nearby. But he's probably got a very strong pair of binoculars.
Okay, cool. Yeah, he's not paying the ticket amount at the moment. Right, so, John, you run Eden Sessions, Wilderness and Citadel. So in terms of you're the talent booker for these festivals?
Yeah, I'm a sort of promoter, if you like. So my role is to primarily book the artists, and I'm the sort of architecture of the landscape of each event, if you like.
Yeah, I got you. Okay, so just going back a bit to this sort of a crazy world of festivals that we've ended up in. What was the first festival you went to?
The first festival I went to was Glastonbury in 1986, I think.
Showing your age.
Yeah, I really am. I really am. I think we were 16 and The Cure headlined Friday night and there was an electric storm and Robert Smith came on and said, on a night like this, and it stuck with me forever. It was just phenomenal. And I think the only other thing I remember is I remember Doctor and the Medics on stage two, and I think the Psychedelic Furs headlined the Sunday night.
Wow. So obviously Emily Eves kicked off this AZ of festivals, and yeah, you know, Glastonbury, it's kind of the granddaddy. Is that still a big influence on you?
Yeah, I mean, we actually live near Glastonbury now. Not for any particular reason, but we're half an hour from the site, and as you mentioned earlier, I'm very old now, and I have, you know, I have a 19-year-old son, I have a 17-year-old daughter, and an 11-year-old son. They all go. Me and my wife go. They all go. We all go off on our own. I'm sure much like your family, and you know, they all do their own thing. So, it's very much part of the fabric of our lives. Always has. I mean, I've been every year since '86, except for a couple when I thought it was getting too commercial, so I went to other places. But then I came back.
And what are your rules? What are the family rules when you go to festivals? Because obviously, we're both running some of our festivals, family festivals, and you know, my kids are a bit younger than that. But you know, we're just letting them kind of get to the stage where they can go off and do their own thing. What are your rules? I suppose with a 19-year-old, there are no rules.
There's certainly no rules.
You just hope you don't bump into them.
Well, yeah, basically. I mean, at Wilderness, I would say Wilderness is such a safe festival that my 11-year-old will go off with a group of kids who are like up to 15, and they all look after each other, and we all camp together, so people come back and there's always someone there, you know. The jungle drums are quite strong, so if something goes off, I'll hear about it.
Right, so, okay.
You know, at least you've got a radio.
Yeah. Okay, in Glastonbury in the 80s, I know this isn't our festival, but I love talking about Glastonbury. Everyone likes hearing about Glastonbury. I mean, I didn't start going till the sort of, well, very late 80s, early 90s, but Glastonbury in the 80s, I imagine, was very politicised, Billy Bragg, kind of pretty right on.
Yeah, I mean, I remember thinking it was going to be, I didn't really know what it was, actually, and we all went, a mate lived near Frome, and he said he'd come to this festival. We didn't really know what it was, and we didn't have a tent, and we just turned up, and
who needs a tent at Glastonbury?
Lost ourselves for 3 days, literally. But I do remember, I mean, I remember it was like Mad Max. you know, it really was lawless. I do remember seeing a member of the travelling community lying face down in a puddle with his Alsatian sniffing around him and going to my mate, I think he's dead.
Oh, God.
And being very freaked out about it. And then about 2 hours later, saw him walking around and I was just like, wow, he's, you know, he's risen from the dead. It's amazing.
Dancing around on psychedelics. Okay, cool. So so that's Glasgow. So that was your sort of intro. I mean, what is the magic of... I know it's a sort of silly question in a way, but what is that, the magic of festivals to you? Because we all try and create that, our own shows, and we love going to other people's shows and getting that
feeling. I think, you know, the real thing is it's escape from normal life. I think that's why we all do it, and that's why people like to go to festivals. And, you know, of course, the cliche is you've got a 9-to-5 job and then you go and lose yourself for the weekend. But, you know, it really is that. You know, there's nowhere else where you can actually have so much entertainment in one space, you know, and particularly Wilderness, for example, and Citadel to a slightly lesser extent because it's an urban show. You know, Wilderness, particularly the food, is as important as the music, as is the theatre, as is the politics, as is the late night partying. So, you know, it's the full sort of Sunday papers fabric of culture.
Yeah. That's a very good marketing line there. But yeah,
I'll bill you later.
We're going to get into the... we'll talk a bit about the lineup in just a little while. So what's the best part of your job? I know from booking festivals that it sort of has its highs and lows, if you will, in quite large amounts.
I think it's you and I have been doing this for so long, it's probably slightly second nature, but, you know, for people that don't know, 90% of the work is done way before the festival. You know, in fact, when you're at the festival, it's really just firefighting with artists, which can be a problem or can be a delight. So I think that for me, the best feeling, I think, for every promoter is to stand at the back of a field at a sold out festival and watch your headliner with the lights and go, shit, I had a part in making that happen. And that, I think if you lose that excitement, then you need to go and do something else. That's still, you know, you've got to have that buzz. I mean, I know some people who were nameless who work all year on their shows and they hardly even watch the main stage. And that, to me, seems crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's tempting, isn't it, to sort of... you just can't get around everything that you've booked.
I
mean, definitely on Wilderness, there's hundreds of things from speakers to naked people in the woods to sort of live acts, and you can't do everything.
I obviously have to base myself on the main stage for pretty much the whole weekend, you know, and obviously I nip out and go out, and after the main stage is closed down, I do a little bit of partying, but I'm off the hook on Sunday night and then everyone's knackered and there's no one to party with, so it's normally me and my 11-year-old.
Okay, and what's the worst part of your job?
I don't know. I mean, I think the stress of booking artists, you know, let's be honest, that's the key, because the pressure is really high. You know, if you don't get your headliners in place, you're not going to sell the tickets. However brilliant the rest of your programming is, you've got to have those headliners in. Otherwise, you know, a lot of people, probably 80% of the public, just look at the headlines, even at Glastonbury. You know, I've heard agents say there's only 6 slots, you know, 3 on the pyramid, yeah, and 3 on the other. I mean, we all know there's thousands of slots, but that's what sells your tickets.
And also
reiterates your brand to a certain extent. So the competition is so fierce for headliners now that you are constantly disappointed, because, you know, you think you're getting something and then you don't get it, and then you have to go to plan B and plan C, and then, you know, I love looking back at my beginning of the year wish list and it's like, wow, that's amazing. What the Arctic Monkeys, Radiohead and The Cure all on one show. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, often I know that problem myself. You start with a dream list, and then by the time you actually end up with you might have one out of the 3 or 4, but you rarely get all 3. I mean, does that demoralise you? Do you ever feel like...
I think you have to be made of stern stuff. Otherwise, you know, it will kill you, literally. I mean, Eden was an interesting one, because before I wasn't a promoter before Eden. I sort of fell into working at Eden. I was working at a record label. So I was an A&R man, actually. And then I started a record label, went to Eden, and it was being built. and thought this looks like a good place for a show. So I sort of literally fell into it and made like awful mistakes. I remember going to see an agent at Helter Skelter, the much missed Helter Skelter, and booking Pulp, which was brilliant. That was the first booking we did, and they just made the record about the environment job. It was just perfect.
That's a pretty incredible first act to book.
Yeah, and the agent was like, yeah, I mean, I couldn't not let Jarvis have a look at this because it's so down his street. And he said, who else is playing? And I said, well, I've got PJ Harvey on the Friday. And he went, have you? And I went, yeah. He said, well, I represent her too, and you haven't. And he said, listen, John, never talk to anyone except the agent. It's like, it was good. It was a good lesson, but...
And did you end up with Pulp and PJ Harvey?
PJ Harvey came the next year.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it was Pulp, Spiritualize and Doves, actually.
That's it, yeah.
It was
incredible.
All right.
And how much did you pay for Pulp?
Probably about as much as I pay my third to the top at Wilderness now.
Yeah, so kind of five figures.
Somewhere in the five-figure area.
If we could go back to those glory days and book
But
Pulp.
In those days, we actually had serious conversations about getting the bands to play for free because it's a charity and it's for the environment. And, you know, I was one going, look, it's a great idea, guys, but it'll never happen.
Yeah, OK. So, I mean, let's talk about the Eden session soon as we're in that space. I mean, embarrassingly, I haven't actually been. I've driven past it many a time, but I really need to go, firstly, to see the actual space and obviously to see the great actual booking. But just set the scene in a little...
Well, I think, I say it a lot, you know, I'm sort of semi-famous in Cornwall, big fish in a small pond, but it is one of the greatest venues on the planet. It really is. And, you know, people do say it stands out next to Sydney Opera House, Red Rocks, those kind of venues, Hollywood Bowl, because it's so iconic, you know. So you've got the two massive biomes and open-air stage in front of the biomes. Biomes are lit up. You know, the setting is just...
Wow.
Incredible.
Yeah.
It's taken 18 years for people to really get it in the industry because we're 4 hours from London. You know, and no one really cares. Paris is closer, you know. So whilst people in the industry don't really care about it, they still really care about their exclusivities. So we still, you know, so it's a very tough show to book, actually.
Yeah.
But what it's got going for it is artists want to play it.
Yeah,
because
sure.
It's great.
And there'll always be lots of artists that will look at that and go, wow. And for artists and headliners these days, often, you know, it's a bit like Jodrell Bank and Blue Dot, it's like, wow, if I can play in front of like a huge giant space telescope, or I can play at the Eden Project. And so this year, I mean, you know, you've got Nile Rodgers, you've got the Chemical Brothers and Kylie all down there for starters. So
yeah, and we've got some others to come. Yeah.
And have any of those played there before?
No. Actually, yeah, Nile Rodgers has. He supported the XX about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, cool.
That was quite a bill. And didn't sell out the XX and Chic. And it was the day that Chic played was the week that the Daft Punk song came out.
Wow.
And
it still didn't sell out.
And it hadn't quite hit. So I remember he wasn't allowed to play it. Have you seen that? He wasn't allowed to play it legally. He wasn't allowed to play it. So he'd play the Chic set, which is incredible, as we all know. And then he'd do an outro to that. He'd just play a little guitar and then walk off and play it with the PA.
I saw him at Glastonbury. I was on the stage dancing around and he sort of sang it to the audience, but he didn't play the guitar at the same time. So maybe that was the rule.
I think he's got over that now, but yeah.
Yeah, no, sure, yeah. It's the Daft Punk rules.
He's got enough hits anyway. But that's going on sale in about half an hour's time.
Exciting. And so obviously the Eden sessions, you know, some festivals take place over one day, some play over a weekend. This is a kind of summer session, isn't it?
Yeah, it's over a month.
Over a month,
mid-June
right.
to mid-July. And we have a license for 10 shows, but we only ever do around 7 or 8. I think 8's the most we've done. And the beauty of it is we don't have to do 8. You know, we could do 2, or we could do Radiohead times 8 or 10, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can be flexible in what we do, and we can do midweek shows too, which works brilliantly for us. And this year we have 7 acts that are playing at Glastonbury.
Wow.
Just because we're on the cycle.
Yeah. And if it's raining, do you let them in the biomes?
In 18 years we've only had a couple of really bad ones. Africa Calling, which was the Live 8, we got the Africans, which Hypod didn't book, which was brilliant, but that was like a hurricane. But it's a hard standing floor,
Yeah.
So okay. There's no mud.
No mud. Okay. You're selling
it's
it.
It's just not already. That. It's just not
a
that.
Festival with no mud.
Exactly.
It's the opposite of Glastonbury.
Now that's a good marketing line.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate. Okay, so that's the Eden Sessions. That's one off your list. Wilderness, obviously, the big one as well. This year, great, incredible lineup with Robin, Bombay Bicycle Club back after 10 years, is that right?
It's only five, actually.
5 years,
yeah.
Okay. We
did our last show, actually, at Citadel 5 years ago. Well, they did Earls Court as well, but the last festival show.
Brilliant. And Robin, tell us about Robin. I mean, obviously,
yeah, Robin's
album last year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Robin was one that we really focused on and really wanted to go for. It's sort of, you know, we've done, you know, artists like Bjork in the past, and I think, you know, she's very much in that kind of artistic space / electronic, which is very much what our audience like. And it's an exclusive UK show, which was very key to what we, you know, what we're trying to do there.
Okay, and I mean, yeah, Wilderness, as you've sort of alluded to, and as people that are fans of the festival know, it's not just the main stage. In fact, it's a whole sort of plethora of like you say, the Sunday paper, so it's every sort of artistic discipline. So tell us about some of these things. I'll just throw some names at you. Letters Live.
So Letters Live is absolutely brilliant. So it's I think Benedict Cumberbatch has something to do with the running of it. So they do it in London and New York, in various venues. I think the last one they did, the Albert Hall. And basically it's well-known actors, musicians, celebrities, if you like, reading important letters. There was a letter that Patti Smith wrote to Robert Mapplethorpe when he was dying about their friendship and their relationship, and he died before he got the letter. And I think it was Ben Kingsley read that.
Wow.
And the whole place is in tears. It's an absolutely brilliant thing. I mean, the one in London, Nick Cave sung Into Your Arms, and it's the only festival that they appear at.
Yeah.
So that's coming back for the third year. It's brilliant. In fact, there's hardly anyone at the main stage, so I don't know who's clashing with Letters Live. They want to watch out.
Yeah, watch out. Okay, God's Jukebox with the Wilderness Orchestra.
So yeah, that's a bit of fun on the atrium stage, second stage, where the orchestra just plays songs that people in the crowd sort of give to people side of stage, and so it's like a live orchestral jukebox.
Yeah,
there's a hip hop karaoke thing alongside that, which, you know, it's fun too.
Yep, Okie dokes. World's largest spoon and cuddle.
Ah, now that's an interesting one. I'm not directly involved with the booking of that one.
Will you be involved in the actual spoon?
I may be busy, but I know they did it last year. Not the world's biggest one, but they did one. And I think they went so well that they thought, let's go for the record.
Is that a sort of vertical activity or horizontal?
Horizontal. So yes, exactly. It's a circle. Down. You're spooning your partner. Someone's behind you. Okay. I think... I've been led to believe that you place the person's hands on you so they don't go in the wrong place.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean. But it's in the healing well-being area.
Oh, well, that's all right.
Which I don't generally go to.
Touch people in inappropriate places if...
You said it. You said it.
Okay, cool. Rather you than me. The wilderness cricket match is obviously a sort of historic part of the wilderness story.
The cricket is a funny one because for the first 2 years I worked on wilderness, I didn't go to the cricket because, you know, whilst I'm a cricket fan, amateur cricket at a festival didn't particularly appeal. But people kept saying, you've got to go. So third year I went. I tell you, it's absolutely brilliant because... The Bearded Kitten do the production of it, and the commentator is absolutely brilliant. And why he's not on TV or radio, I don't know. He's absolutely hysterical. And people have started to streak, so this has become a big thing. And the commentary on that is very funny. So you may have like up to 20 to 30 streakers, or just spontaneous people in the audience running across the
cricket. Is anyone at Wilderness actually wearing clothes during any of the
festival?
There's
a lot of nudity.
Is it a secret naturist festival in the making?
Well, you know, there is an income stream there.
Okay, and you've got some new stages this year. So you've got the Valley and the High.
Yeah, the valleys are late night party area, which goes pretty hedonistic, which is fantastic, brilliantly produced, but it's an over 18s venue, huge queues to get it all the time, so we just thought we needed to spread that part of the festival. So electronic music is quite a big part of this, as it is at all festivals. So the Higher Ground is a new area which is in the same part of the site, but that's going to be programmed all day and all night as well. So there's three late night venues now.
So more rave and more naked people.
More naked rave, yes, please.
Okay, and we touched briefly on the food. Obviously, that's a real integral part of the wilderness experience. Long table banquets.
They go pretty mad as well. You know, on paper it looks very civilized, but I've seen one of those banquets with celebrity chef Ottolenghi. Everyone's hammered, standing on the tables, dancing, you know, champagne in the air. I mean, you know, feet in their starters, frankly.
Rock and roll cuisine.
Yeah.
So what's the most mental thing you've seen at Wilderness?
Well, I was very shocked last year because I was walking through the valley and I saw a couple having sex right in the middle of the crowd. And I was like, I told everybody about this and no one looked particularly perturbed. In fact, everyone kept saying, what position were they in? And I was like, well, that's irrelevant. They were having sex in public and no one batted an eyelid.
There is a theme running here, John. But yeah, I mean, I remember going in Glastonbury in the 90s, you used to see a lot of naked
nudity.
People and... And then that sort of dried up. Yeah, they're sort of...
Yeah.
They've all moved to wilderness. Okay, so let's get on to the final festival in your triumvirate of festies that you're programming, which is Citadel, obviously London-based, so an urban festival. So obviously, yeah, we're all kind of aware that over the last decade, I suppose, the sort of day festival is really... made a mark in, you know, pretty much every major city has now got at least one. So is that in amongst your festivals, you've got the sort of pastoral countryside Eden project, then you've got the real very countryside wilderness, and then
urban. Sort of urban, keep it gritty.
Yeah
I mean, Citadel grew out of Lovebox, really, because Margaret were always looking for something on the Sunday. Sunday's a tough day for festivals in general, particularly in London, to get people out. So instead of just trying to book bigger and bigger acts to make people come out on a Sunday, what we decided to do was celebrate Sunday. So Citadel is all about repositioning Sundays a day we'd go out, you know. And the original concept was really simple. It was like the best pub garden in the world. So you got great music, great food, great beer, and really quite simple, you know. But family friendly.
And musically, obviously, I mean, this year's headliners, you've got Catfish and the Bottlemen, Rag and Bone Man, Friendly Fires. So it's sort of indie, electronic.
Yeah, it's clear space between what we do at Lovebox. So it's not a dance festival at any level, because people don't really want to dance on a Sunday, particularly in that manner. And yeah, it's more organic, if you like. So Communion are our partners on the show, and they program Stage 2. We've had people from Michael Kiwanuka, this year Beth Denner headlining, Matt Corby. So it's kind of acoustic element to that, but kind of cutting edge. We do have a little bit of sort of feeling that we need a bit of edge in there. So Stage 3, we've got people like Fontaine's DC, Murder Capital, Dream Wife, you know. So yeah, I guess we are verging on that sort of alternative kind of space that is getting smaller and smaller, really.
Yeah. And London is getting busy with, I mean, obviously Lovebox and the like have been around for years, but with All Points East and stuff there, and obviously Field Day, and, you know, there's a lot of festivals in London.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not going to lie, it's made it really competitive. When we set up Citadel, it was kind of for acts like Ben Howard, who was our first headliner, who weren't at the stage they could headline Hyde Park, but they could headline a 20, 30,000 capacity festival in London. Now, of course, there's about 8 of those. You
know. Yeah.
Field Day.
And counting.
Field Day were always slightly left field of us, and, you know, Tom's a good mate of ours, and we always discuss what we're doing, and, you know, again, there's a bit clear space between what we're doing and what Tom's doing. He's much more avant-garde, I guess, although we've all probably had to come to the middle ground a little bit more. But with All Points East, you know, there's 6 shows there, and all those headliners could be Citadel headliners. And you know, I believe they get paid a lot more money, and, you know, so it's competitive.
Apparently so.
You heard it here first.
Okay, cool. So, I mean, the media and the naysayers, you know, us British people love to have a good old moan, that, you know, constantly, like, oh, festivals, you know, the bubbles burst, it's all over, blah, blah, blah. What, you know, what's looking into the John Empson crystal ball? What are you reading into the future?
I think festivals always have to reinvent themselves. They always have had to, you know. You can't just do the same thing every year, otherwise you end up failing. I think most festivals have a sort of 10-year cycle, life cycle, you know, before they either have to change or relocate or whatever they do. I think at the moment, all the kind of behemoth festivals, your Reddings, your Transmits, your Downloads, what have you, I think they're all in rude health, you know. And a lot of them now, you know, talking about Glastonbury in the late 80s, early 90s, it was like alternative people went to festivals, you know, that was our space. Normal people didn't go to festivals, but now you have this kind of rite of passage where you do your GCSEs and you go to Reading or go to Boardmasters. And, you know, if you're 19 at Reading, you're old now. You're literally, you know. I think I heard Melvin say he has 130,000 16-year-olds on the campsite on Wednesday night.
Wow, that is absolutely,
you know what I mean?
Terrifying.
Imagine the chaos. I've got one at home. So I think, you know, those ones will always be good. I think we've seen a bit of a decline in the experiential boutique festivals with the loss of Secret Garden Party, Best of All, you know.
I've heard of one of those.
Yeah. So I think that space is going to be the interesting one. And obviously, shows like Boomtown are doing brilliantly well. Shows like Secret Cinema are doing really well. I think that immersive thing is going to become quite important. And I think audiences demand more. You know, originally we were happy with a shitty pint of cider and a burger. Now we want, you know, a kale burger and, you know, a rosé. But now I think people are going to want more from their entertainment as well. They're probably going to want VR, AR, all that kind of stuff, you know. Who knows? Hopefully I'll be too old and out of game by then.
That's great. No, that's brilliant, John. Thank you so much for doing this. It sounds like for the listeners at home, the future is bright for festivals.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's the 8th set of festivals with Rob De Bank. This is Rob De Bank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.